Welcome to City Talks, a monthly podcast looking at the big issues facing UK cities and the latest thinking in urban policy. I'm your host, Andrew Carter, from the think tank Centre for Cities. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to this edition of City Talks. My guest today is Pat Ritchie. Pat is Chief Executive of Newcastle City Council and is the Chair of the Core Cities Chief Executives Group and the Chair of the Government Property Agency. She's also the former Chief Executive of the Homes and Communities Agency, now Homes England, and former Deputy Chief Executive of One North East Regional Development Agency, for those that remember the RDAs. Welcome, Pat.
Hello, thank you.
So, I mean, and I should say before we start, we're recording this in mid-December 2020, so bear that in mind if you're listening to it at a later date. So, Pat, that's a seriously impressive CV, and particularly, I suppose, because it covers, you know, national, regional, and local. In a sense, you've done it all in the sort of public policy field. Reflecting that, I suppose I want to start really dive in, but get your views on why does central government find devolving responsibilities, power, and money to local governments so problematic? I mean, this is not just a Conservative issue, this is a Labour issue as well. What is it about central government? Why is it that they find it difficult to deal with local government in a kind of consistently constructive way? What's your view on that?
Well, I think partly it's around the kind of perception that if you devolve, you're somehow losing control of delivery and you're somehow losing control of accountability. I do think there are ways around that, but I think that fundamentally, civil servants see the world through accountability to ministers, and often devolution kind of gets in the way of, or is seen not to be as clear a means of accountability. If you look at my experience in housing, for example, running the National Housing Agency as I did at a time when devolution deals were being developed, there was a kind of view that somehow the housing minister would lose control of being able to deliver the numbers if he devolved completely. And the housing minister is held accountable for those numbers and delivery. And I think sometimes devolution gets caught up in that debate. I think there are ways around that. When I was at HCA, we agreed kind of local deals with local places where we worked alongside. And actually your delivery is better because you're aligning to the local and you probably get more numbers because you're working with places. But there is a bit of that, I think, the sort of policy levers nationally and being able to deliver national priorities and how that sort of sits alongside devolution. I think that as we go into the recovery from the pandemic and as we go into the impact of Brexit, there's something for me about how local economic plans drive the future of economic recovery, and the way in which government then empowers those plans will be key to how different places come out of the undoubted economic shock that we're going to face across the country.
So that's an interesting point around that sort of accountability, because we hear this a lot, in a sense that, you know, government is worried that if they give you more responsibility, you may not deliver, or you may deliver something that they don't typically want or would prioritize. And I suppose that is part of the feature of a very centralized system, in the sense that government wants things to be done and it wants things that it wants to be done. And in a more devolved environment, you have to have a slightly different approach, don't you?
You do. And I think it's often you need to focus on the outcomes. So What government wants is delivery in those outcomes. How you do it in a place might look different. You know, but so long as you're held, you can hold a place accountable to delivery, but they might do it in slightly different ways. It's when you get into the sort of micromanagement of delivery that things often get difficult. So, you know, if you look at some of the successes we've had in Newcastle over the last 8 years I've been chief exec, and before that, because the foundations were laid before that, on delivery of investment in the city centre, on housing, on kind of broader economic region, They've been delivered by government giving us powers and freeing us up to do deals and work in our place. But the outcomes of jobs, of innovation, of growing the economy have been achieved. It's just that the kind of tools that you've given have been developed locally. I'd say the biggest game changer in development in Newcastle was when we got the tax increment finance deal as part of our city deal, where we call it the accelerated development zone. And that allowed us to take a long-term view on the development of key sites in the city, to use our borrowing and to use our covenant to work alongside the private sector to bring in development. And that was government, in effect, giving us accountability to deliver and given us the tools to do it, but we then were able to shape that as worked for Newcastle.
And do you then think that that has a, you know, a kind of knock-on effect then, in that the next, you know, the next round of conversation, that track record of, you know, of delivery and prudence and all of that, does that weigh then on future conversation, or is all that ignored and you feel like you're starting again the next time you have another conversation?
Well, it varies, I think, according to the different priorities of government and ministers, and, you know, politics and all of that always comes into it. But I think the thing I would say is that as cities, if you've got others, it's not just about the council, it's how the private sector, the university sector, and partners advocate for that place that is really important. You've got to have a clear bought into vision that you all get behind and that you're all focused on delivery. And if that message is going to government via the private sector, the universities, ourselves and others, then that's quite a powerful mix. If you could, the public sector can invest in alongside the private sector. And that's really what we're going to have to, you know, think about in terms of the city in the future, is how do you work with business? How do you work with investors? How do you work with people locally to really develop the way what Newcastle's going to be like post the pandemic and in response to Brexit? And, you know, I think we built the vision that we're delivering now over a sort of, I don't know, 15-year period. And I think, you know, I was involved in a lot of it when I was at the RDA, which is odd because I'm now then at the delivery end of, you know, actually seeing these sites completed and delivered. But you need that kind of people coming together around that long-term vision and all working towards it. Universities have been key to the delivery of a lot of our development. So the Helix, which is the former Newcastle Brewery site, massive regen site. Universities were the partners in that site with Newcastle Council and then L&G, and we've delivered the National Institute for Data there, National Institute for Aging. We've got housing on that site, university, we've got two grade A offices, we've got a lab where people, tech businesses are developed, we've got an incubator site. That was all about a kind of shared endeavour and people keeping with it. And the tax increment finance, or the ADZ, allowed us to deliver that long-term vision because it was a long-term settlement. Yeah. And for me, I think that's the biggest thing, is having the ability to take that long-term view, bidding and kind of, you know, individual bidding sort of processes don't get you that. You know, if we're really going to come out of this, need long-term settlements for places, either at the regional level or at the city level, or I would argue kind of both, because the one benefits the other.
Yeah, no, that's a great point about the kind of, well, the long-term nature of both figuring out and then thinking about and then setting out what it is you're trying to achieve. And then obviously the implementation of that, it might happen in sort of packets or in, you know, bits at a time, but it's part of that broader program. But without the financing and funding certainty attached to that, just makes these things much more difficult, doesn't it? You can only proceed by, you know, by the latest funding pot, and that's, you know, not really a conducive way to go about it. We'll come back to the and get your reflections on, you know, the pandemic and what that's meant for Newcastle and the economy, mm-hmm. and the society more generally. But just in this sort of the devolution space. I suppose one question or thought from you on, you know, you talked about accountability. Have you thought about that? You know, are there ways that local government could have a higher, more accountability to central government? I suppose if that would be one of the ways that it would satisfy government to let go of the reins, is it giving more scrutiny to central government of local government? You talked about, you know, select committees and, you know, the Treasury committee, et cetera, et cetera. But what's your thoughts on that? Is this an issue that really we need to grapple with?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, as you said earlier, Andrew, I didn't work in local government until about 8 years ago when I came to Newcastle. I'd always been in central government, or, you know, kind of central government agencies, really. I did work in Newcastle a long time ago. I came to Newcastle in the late 80s, the early 90s, and it was a very different place. So it's maybe a different thing. But I think what's interesting about local government, it's probably the most scrutinised bit of government.
You're right.
It's scrutinised by, you know, a lot of what I do is scrutinised locally. Our politicians are very accountable locally. We have scrutiny committees, they are public, they're open. There is a huge amount of scrutiny. So I think you need to be thinking quite carefully about how that's positioned. What I would say is that I suppose the thing we need to maybe highlight here is the role of the combined authority and how that accountability works at a mayoral level.
Yeah.
And, you know, the we've set up a structure of mayoral combined authorities, which cities are key players in and kind of at the heart of those combined authorities. It seems to me that's the framework that we still need to use for local accountability. And it would be a backward step, I think, if we didn't continue to invest in that sort of mayoral accountability structure. What I think we've done in the north of Tyne is really sort of demonstrated that Newcastle, Northumberland and North Tyneside working together recognises the sort of interdependencies of the city, the rural, the kind of coastal, kind of suburban economy, and how they work together. And I would say that Newcastle's been instrumental in working with the others on our recovery plan, because we've worked deliberately at that level, at the north of Tyne level, to develop our plan. We've also done that in collaboration with the south of Tyne and looked at a level of the 7 as part of our recovery. But we've recognised that it's not a towns or cities argument, it's about how they work as part of a place-based economy. And what happens to Sunderland, and, you know, kind of as we go through this recovery, and Newcastle are kind of mutually important to each other, but to the broader regional economy.
I was going to touch on that later on, but now that you've raised, I mean, because as you know, and obviously you see this both in your day job, as it were, as chief exec of Newcastle Council, but also as the heavily involved in the Core Cities movement and that group as well. You know, the debate now often is kind of portrayed as a cities versus towns sort of scenario. Or north versus, you know, south, but it's a very sort of antagonistic and a very us and them, or, you know, cities do well because towns do badly. I mean, just your reflections on I suppose, A, the nature of that debate. I mean, how have we kind of got to that position? But also, I suppose, what do we then do about it? Because I suppose, like you and you were saying, you know, that it's much more nuanced than that. It's a bit more complicated than that. But at the other hand, it's a simpler argument, which is places are interdependent, they play different roles, and actually one requires the other and vice versa. It's not against or you know, for or against. So just how have we got to this position, and how do we get out of it, I suppose, Pat? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think partly we've got to this position because we've undoubtedly seen over, if you think before the pandemic, we've undoubtedly seen you know, kind of cities have been on a journey of change, but they're still pretty successful in the main. And you've seen a decline in in some high streets and towns associated with cities, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
And I think that part of the kind of debate is driven by that. What's the future of towns and cities, and how do they work together for mutual benefit? And you know, I think some of the work around things like the High Streets Fund is not about just towns thinking about the solution for themselves. It's what's their place in that broader economy. So I live in a village in Northumberland. I've lived in the city. I've lived in different parts of the region, but Newcastle's our city, you know. And a lot of people here working in Newcastle, but a lot of people also like the fact that we live here. And if you've got good connectivity, both transport and digital, there's something about how you think about the future of places as part of an interconnected set of economies, not an either or. But you've got in that, I think about what's the place of you know, areas that are struggling more, and how does an example of that would be Newcastle University are doing a whole lot of work in Blyth around new renewable energies. That bit of the Northumberland coast has had issues with, you know, towns and kind of sort of high streets, and we've done work in the combined authority to promote the Newcastle Northumberland line that will run through the coast and connect people backwards and forwards to southeast Northumberland. We've also looked at the work we're doing on renewable energies. We've got a joint housing plan. So for me, I think, you know, housing development in the city might look quite different to, say, you know, development in or around Blyth or Ashington. But there's something about how you develop that plan jointly to play the way that people want to live, and but also recognise the kind of interconnections. And I think I'd really, really strongly feel it's not an either or. And you know, if cities, you know, I'm pretty bullish about Newcastle in the medium term. But I think if we don't invest in the recovery of cities, then towns will suffer.
Yes.
And I think and you can't see that if you've got assets like universities, you've got offices and significant urban work centres, you know, places where people work, you've got to accept that they've got to come back. The recovery isn't going to be led by, you know, just towns, it's the two together.
Yeah.
Just for me, and maybe that's because I've worked in Newcastle, but I've worked at a regional level before that, and a national. So you tend to not see it as kind of either or. And if you talk to people in a lot of the towns in this region, they see Newcastle as their city.
Yeah.
You know, football helps maybe, but it's, you know, the this side.
Even the people from close to Sunderland, Pat. Let's not go there on that one.
Sunderland, they will, you know, South Shields, bits of South Tyneside. They see Sunderland as the city. And I think you've got to just think about how people think about how they move and how they live.
I completely agree. And I think the point you made earlier on is, you know, the attraction of mayoral combined authorities, for example, is that they provide a bit of structure and a means almost to A, articulate, you know, what you've said, but more than that, then go beyond and actually begin to set out how on the money side or on the implementation side, how you can begin to, you know, make the best and make the most of the different parts and the different roles that those parts play. I think that's one of the attractions. I mean, that's, I think, the one of the attractions for the, you know, of the MCAs. I don't know if you kind of see it that way as well.
I do. And I think what the Mayoral Combined Authority gives you is a kind of seat as part of that network, talking to government. You know, there's definitely been over the last couple of years more investment in combined authorities. The brownfield housing land devolved to Mayoral Combined Authorities was important. And I think You know, they're a kind of recognition of the need to work to different strengths. What's been interesting about our combined authority is that it doesn't have transport because of the kind of arrangements in the Northeast. But what it has is a much more of a focus on people and on inclusiveness and on tackling inequalities. And I think that's really important as we get out of the, if we're thinking about looking at, you know, recovery plans, that they reflect not just the kind of physical change, but how we get people skilled, how we get people's confidence back. How, you know, the big thing about the pandemic is it's demonstrated the interconnection between health and the economy, but it's also potentially exacerbated inequalities. And, you know, I think in a place like the Northeast, and it's certainly in our combined authority, we've been very conscious of that. And, you know, the town's argument is as much about people who don't have access to economic opportunities and skills as it is about doing nice things in high streets.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's something about, for me, one of the big areas of really further push in terms of devolution has got to be around skills and employment. And so the recovery issues around people need to be devolved to the local level. You know, in Newcastle at the moment, we've got 33% of our workforce furloughed. Yeah. You know, and that's a big number.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of those in hospitality
and
in kind of what makes Newcastle the city it is. And you know, we think that we are best placed to work with businesses and to work with local people to help people retrain, to help them kind of back to work through Kickstart and the other things that government are doing.
Yeah.
But I think that needs to be much more focused on local delivery than is the case at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, and you've talked about it, yeah, but Carrie, I know, it's a very difficult, it's a huge issue, but the way that the pandemic and then the lockdown and then recovery and then lockdown and so, I mean, how has that played out in your area? And obviously, you know, you have an eye to beyond Newcastle itself. I mean, how would you sort of summarise where Newcastle and the area is, the broader area is sort of currently? And then we can, you know, get your reflections on what you think the immediate, you know, the next 12 months or 24, and then maybe, you know, the next 5 years or whatever it is. But I mean, how would you summarise what the effects have been, Pat?
It's been quite an extraordinary year, really. And at the start of it all, when we locked down and we locked down completely, that in some ways felt really hard. But in some ways, that was the easier bit, in that, you know, everybody went to work at home, everything closed down, the city centre was just extremely quiet.
Yeah.
And you know, we kind of worked that through. Then we got into the sort of challenge of how do you bring the city back to life, and how do you get people back to the city? And in the summer, you know, the kind of footfall in Newcastle got back to about 60-70% of what it had been before lockdown. And that was people, we consciously worked with businesses to get outside space, to help people kind of socially distance. We put city guides in place to help people moving about and to support queuing. We pedestrianised big bits of Grey Street, which is one of our most iconic streets. We put pavement cafes outside there, and you know, cycleways, pedestrian, and we worked really hard to bring all of that back. And there was, you know, real evidence that there was a bit of an upturn in the city economy. And that what was really important about that was it was retail and hospitality kind of working together. And the kind of offer of the city was such that was, you know, that people came back. We'd then gone in a series of kind of increased restrictions. So we've been in effect in tier three for a while. You know, we went into restrictions again in September, and we've had that right. So we've had hospitality kind of had restrictions where they couldn't have anybody outside your household. You could only go inside with your household. Then we've had now hospitality shut in tier three. And I suppose the thing that is difficult is that kind of stop start. You know, I think if you want to think, you know, we may or may not be in tier three this week. I think it's unlikely, come out of tier three. I think that's unlikely. But the thing that I think businesses need is some degree of certainty. And that's what we've really got to work with in the short term in the new year is, you know, assuming we don't get out of this over Christmas, then how do we work to use things like the emerging vaccine, the test and trace system to target that at getting the economy back? It's been a more mixed picture on offices where, you know, some have pretty much kind of had people working at home and very few in the city centre. A number have brought people back and want to do more of that. And I think the sort of the thing for cities is to recognise that the economies can still thrive. It will just be different. You know, the COVID's accelerated the changes we were going to see in retail anyway, and we were kind of planning for that. Offices will look different, but people will come back to offices. But there's some evidence that they'll want to come back to regional centres like ours. You know, out of London, out of big conurbations, because you can live in a place and easily commute into Newcastle and work at home and in an office. And we're going to try and promote that. And then I think the big thing is how do you get people in the summer confidently back in the cities? So we're looking at a series of events. We're looking at kind of really trying to, when it's safe, bring the city back and get people back there while reconfiguring retail and doing more on housing. And I think the other big thing is how do you create space and a greener city, because that's what people will want. And that's what I talked about at the beginning, you know, that kind of longer term vision. And we're keen as core cities, we're all articulating slightly different versions of that, but we really want to work with government to do what I talked about before, you know, kind of give us that kickstart investment to then be able to deliver that vision alongside the private sector and others, because, you know, we're not developing this alone. We'll do it with business and with people in the city.
And one of the things you were talking about before actually we started recording was, in a sense, your immense kind of pride in the way that the local government family, as it were, not just the local authority, but broader than that, had responded to, you know, to the pandemic and the challenges thrown up, both in terms of the commitment to it, the sort of civic pride associated with that, but also, I suppose, the, you know, the speed of the response, the flexibility of the response. You know, you talked about introducing, repurposing bits of, you know, bits of the of land and, you know, and buildings and all the rest of it. I mean, how do you hold on to the best bits of the change, both in what's happened but also the way it's happened, you know, as some kind of normality, obviously different, but it's some kind of normality returns as we get deeper into 2021. How do you do that?
I mean, I think it's partly around, you know, leadership and making sure that those leaders that have kind of collaborated continue to do so and keep reminding our organisations and reminding and partners about what we did and how we did it. I do think work has changed. We'll look different. I don't think we'll bring everybody back to the civic and the city centre in the way we've done. It'll be a mix, and I think everybody's going to do that, and that will drive a bit of change in how people operate. And it, in some ways, working in this way is quicker. You know, I've had more frequent meetings with other city leaders, with government, with folk like you, and, you know, with a whole range. You can just do it quicker, and we really shouldn't lose that. And you can do it in a way that's much more, I suppose, visible, you know, on things like this or on webinars and on, you know, we should keep that going. And I think It's partly about leadership. It's partly about not letting the bureaucracy come in again. You know, if you think about particularly around stuff we've done locally with health, you know, where we had to move really quickly to work with students coming back, we just did that. We did it as organisations working together. And we've got to really kind of continue to do that. In a way, I think we were almost a bit too obsessed with governance and kind of, you know, who, you know, accountability to some extent, we talked about earlier, still there because you're still accountable. But we've been able to kind of find ways to work around that and do things that benefit our people.
And do you think that the pandemic has sort of changed the relationship between, you know, the public in your area and local government, you know, in a sense that the problem always with local government is, in a sense, it's everywhere but seen by no one. In a sense, you know, it's like no one gives it the due regard I think that it deserves. But also, you know, the public awareness of what goes on is often pretty low when we see this in, you know, election turnouts, et cetera, which I think undermines ultimately how local government is treated by, you know, by central government in some respects. But do you think the pandemic has begun to change that relationship, has heightened the relationship and the way that the public see it?
I definitely do think that. I think that particularly at the beginning when local government kept everything going, you know, when the bin men were, I mean, my bin men were clapped on their rounds. You know, people were clapping literally as they were going to collecting bins. They got, you know, brilliant like pictures and thank yous. And I think, and you know, if you think about care staff who kept going throughout, if you think about folks that are, you know, doing like registering the births and deaths, you know, we had to pause that for a while. But then the registrars came in before other people had done, and we set up a big sort of socially distanced and registering of particularly births in one of our big banqueting halls. And, you know, they did that in a completely different sort of flexible way. Folk that were highways workers, this, you know, trained to run the crematorium, they were the, you know, library staff, worked on our food banks. It, you know, it's quite amazing, really. But the other thing I think that was interesting was how the city itself stepped up. You know, we had what we call the Toon Army, where an army of volunteers who stepped up to really kind of support people who were shielding. We set up from scratch with a voluntary sector, what we called the City Lifeline Fund, and lots of businesses and individuals put money into that, and that was used to support folk that were shielding. So that whole thing about the role of local government in convening and in enabling and bringing business and people, and what that's, you know, as well as the flexibility and what my staff have done, which I couldn't, you know, I think I'm really, over this last year, that's the thing I'm most proud of, is the way that the council staff have stepped up and done what they've done. But the role of the council in kind of bringing folk together and convening, and particularly public health, you've been fundamental to ensuring that the city gets through through the crisis that we're still not through, but, you know, got through this far.
Yeah.
I think that's the connection between public health and the economy has been, you know, brought into the forefront, really, hasn't it, through all of this?
Yes, they've been, you know, traditionally treated very, you know, very separately, and in some respects, I mean, during the pandemic, at least at the, I think at the national level, they've often been treated as separate, and again, they've been set up in opposition, right? I mean, you either take a health perspective or an economy perspective. I think that's fundamentally wrong, in a sense that the best economic response was a health-led response. In, you know, if we don't get the virus under control, then our ability to do anything from an economy point of view is incredibly limited. And I think we've seen that in the, you know, over the the duration of the pandemic, irrespective almost of what the restrictions mm-hmm. are or aren't at any one given moment. I mean, what's your, I mean, this is, these are the tough questions now, crystal ball times, Pat, but I mean, what, how do you envisage the next 12 months, I suppose, for the Newcastle area? And I suppose, how do you envisage the next 5 years? You alluded to, you know, those sort of degrees of similarity, but with change, you know, it's the city centre, for example, still being the, you know, the regional hub, but with modifications about how we access it and how we use the space once we're in it. But I mean, what's your view of the next 12 months? I mean, how do you see it playing out? And you know, I won't come back in 12 months' time and say, Pat, you got that completely right or completely wrong. But I mean, just your view of it.
Well, I mean, in a way, you know, if you were dealing, you've got to think about COVID as something that probably is going to be with us until well into next year. I'd have thought next summer, fingers crossed, we'll start to get back to something a bit more normal. And whilst it's had a really big impact on hospitality and on culture, which sometimes people forget, which makes the city, I think we can find ways to try and build that back. There will be businesses that undoubtedly will not survive through that, but I think we can get that, you know, we can find a way through that. I think that the mix of different sort of cities, as I've talked about, the big thing I think that worries me is, you know, we've seen unemployment in the northeast rise significantly. And what we've got to really do is make sure that that doesn't become endemic and further reinforce the inequalities in the city. And, you know, as I said to you, I came to Newcastle in the late 80s. I first worked in Newcastle late 80s and the early 90s. And, you know, that was the time when we had riots in Scotswood. We had really severe unemployment. And that's never left me throughout my career. And I think, you know, the big thing will be not to return to that. And we've got to be able to work with government and work with people to look at retraining and employment, particularly of young people. But the big unknown is, if you think about COVID as something where it's very challenging and risky, but you can kind of think, hopefully we're getting to the next stage of it.
Yeah.
The big unknown is Brexit and the kind of potential damage that might have in the more medium to long term.
Yes.
And how those two things balance together in a place like Newcastle is one of the big challenges for us. So offshore, we've got significant number of jobs. You don't see them often in the city centre. We've got about 5,000 jobs on the Tyne working on offshore cabling and kind of exporting, not to Europe largely, but to Africa, in Asia and America, and sort of deep sea piping and offshore supplies. And I think, you know, what happens to that sector, what happens to construction, the kind of future of, kind of the regional capital role, they're all big things. You know, what happens to the service sector? Generally, throughout the pandemic, offshore's kept going, construction's kept going, IT's actually recruiting. We've got a strong digital sector in the city, yeah. Often smaller companies, quite innovative companies. That's been pretty successful. So, yeah. You know, you've got to think about the different bits of the economy, but the big challenge is what happens with Brexit to those bits that actually have been functioning relatively well during COVID. And I think that's one of the big challenges, not just for Newcastle, but for the core cities in the country. And how do you leverage innovation? You know, if the future beyond Brexit is about retaining and developing UK innovation, how do you use our universities and our big assets to be able to do that? And in Newcastle, we're focusing on digital and data, aging, the kind of the opportunities out of the kind of aging economy and that kind of renewable offshore stuff that we talked about. You know, they're the things that longer term, yeah. I think we need to think about, balanced with a kind of vibrant city where people want to live.
And I know you've got views, get your views on, you know, we're recording this on the day. We are still to see the details, but the government now is talking about a reformed approach to the algorithm that sets out where homes and houses need to be built. Obviously, as I said, the detail we will dive into in due course. But the big message, in a sense, is, I think, you know, a re-emphasis on brownfield land versus, you know, non-brownfield, a re-emphasis on non-greater southeast areas. Let me say that. I won't say anything more political than that. And within that, a kind of emphasis again on, you know, on our big cities. And I think, you know, a particular focus, I think, if I remember the details right, on the 20 big cities, obviously, and Newcastle will be squarely in that. But, you know, your views on that approach, but then I think you have some, you know, concerns or issues to raise around how we think about the housing agenda, and maybe we don't kind of give it the full justice that it needs. So, Pat, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I'm not a great fan of algorithms, so in terms of how you kind of think about the development of housing, because it's all got to be about places, really. I think that I've got kind of views on it from a national point of view that are more to do with my previous roles, but yeah. I won't go with those. I'll talk about this from a city perspective, and I think anything that recognises that, you know, the kind of future role of cities is about having the right housing mix and retaining people in the cities has got to be welcome, and recognising that housing is part of the way in which we'll change how we live in cities in the future, that's got to be welcome. Also a recognition that we can develop brownfield land and solutions to that. I would welcome all of that. But I think my worry is, and as you say, Andrew, we don't know the detail yet, is that somehow this will be about numbers and not places. And that's really, really got to be avoided, because, you know, there's been some throwaway stuff, and it might have been the way it's been presented in the press this morning, that says, you know, it's all about converting offices and shops to housing. And that's just not where, you know, as we talked about earlier, yeah, I can't see how easily you would reconfigure Debenhams to housing and flats. But, you know, we're going to have to think differently about the shape of our city centre. So it might be that we can clear sites, and we've got certainly sites that can develop. The mix has got to be the right thing. You know, not everybody. There was also something this morning about large family houses in city centres. Well, you know, we've largely done that in our areas that connect into the city centre. We have got some interest in sort of developments near the river with kind of old long high terrace type housing, yeah. But they're not your traditional family housing. So for me, the big thing is, how does that housing investment help us get the right offer across the whole of the city? And you know, if there's flexibility to do that, and to do it in a way that links to our recovery plans, then that's got to be welcome. But, you know, I think it remains to be seen how the detail goes. And we don't want to lose offices. They'll be different. You know, we're not going to convert them all to flats.
That's my worry, in a sense, is that, you know, we see, you touched on this earlier on, my worry, in a sense, is that we, you know, we see the short-term effect, for example, of, you know, significant numbers of office workers working from home. We project that into the future, that is somehow permanent, and therefore those currently underused offices are, you know, the policy push is to convert them to residential. And then actually in 12 or 24 months time, we actually find that we run out of office space in our places. And that then has a kind of choking effect on the ability of the, you know, the economy to grow again, particularly from a commercial perspective as well. So I'm with you on that. I think we need much more, in some respects, it's almost not quite a wait and see, because that's not the right kind of, you know, the thing that I'm trying to convey. But we have to be very careful about the short-term observations and then jumping on them straight away.
I definitely agree with that. And I, you know, if you look at, with one of my other hats on, the Government Property Agency,
yeah.
government are looking at regional hubs, and you know, part of our job is to deliver those. They'll be smarter, there'll be different departments coming together. They reflect the fact that civil servants need to kind of work across a broader area, be part of the kind of wider regions. But there's no assumption that those offices, those people will all work from home all the time. What you'll get is a kind of inability to have a hub where you work with, you know, you might have DEFRA alongside Department for Transport, and some of the time you're working at home, but some of the time you're working in that hub. And they're important investments in the kind of future regeneration of cities. And one of the things that, you know, has certainly been arguing in the GPA role is we need to work with local government on that to help them become anchors for what the future of city centres will look like. Yeah. And you can see that in, you know, places like Leeds and Manchester, Birmingham, where part of the kind of public-private mix will be civil service jobs. So I really do think that whilst there'll be change, cities will still be important economic and commercial hubs, and that. But what people will want is a degree of flexibility, and they'll want to maybe not to be able to have a conversation like this as civil servants. They won't necessarily all have to go to Marsham Street to do it. They can do it from different parts of the country and work this way. So that's, I think, where we go, I think.
And I think that's a perfect, optimistic and enlightened way to finish. Pat, I could carry on talking to you all day, but I know you're an incredibly busy person at this particular moment in time. Thank you very much indeed for giving us some time and talking to us about, you know, your views on a whole range of on different issues. But Pat Ritchie, thank you very much for being part of City
Talks. Thank you. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by Centre for Cities. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Centre for Cities. Please rate, review and subscribe if you liked what you heard. You can also follow the Centre on Twitter at Centre for Cities, or like us on Facebook and LinkedIn for the latest updates on what the Centre is up to. If you have any comments on the episode or suggestions for topics we should cover in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Do tweet us or send an email to info@centreforcities.org. The music was from Palace Fires by Johnny Foreigner, used with permission, and all rights are reserved.